Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and became a sports writer for the Washington Post. In 1981, he joined WXYZ-TV as an executive producer. Since 1994, he's moderated, written, and produced Spotlight on the News, which airs on WXYZ on Sunday mornings. He's the winner of 12 Emmys for editorial reporting and one Emmy for documentary reporting. We'll ask him where he keeps all those Emmys. His name, Chuck Stokes. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with 13-time Emmy Award-winning, the moderator and producer of Spotlight on the News, Chuck Stokes. Chuck, welcome, an honor to have you.
Jack, it is an absolute pleasure. I've been dodging this for a long time, so it's a pleasure being here, and thank you so much. I have such great respect for the work that you've done and the people you've interviewed.
Sir, we're going to turn the tables on you this evening, okay? Put you in the hot seat.
You know journalists don't like to be in this position. We like to control and ask the questions, not be asked.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your foreparents?
Absolutely. I grew up, as you said, in Cleveland, Ohio. To be more precisely, the suburb of Shaker Heights, which is a very well-known suburb in the Cleveland area. I had a wonderful childhood. As you said, I had four parents. My parents were divorced when I was very young. I think I was probably about 6 years old. I don't even really remember the divorce or anything associated with it. I had two older sisters and two younger sisters. And my two older sisters, it was the three of us at the time, and we lived and were basically raised with my father, my blood father, and my stepmother. And my blood mother and my stepfather lived right in the Cleveland area too, so we would spend a lot of weekends with them. And at the time, that arrangement was put into place because my father was in a better position financially to provide for us. But we had a wonderful, wonderful childhood. And then when both of my parents were remarried, and they both married wonderful people, and both of them just celebrated not too long ago either their 50th or 51st wedding anniversary. So they were great marriages the second time around. They each had a daughter from their marriages, their second marriages. So I have two older sisters, two younger sisters. We had a wonderful childhood. Didn't want for anything. Always had food on the table. We weren't rich. Middle-class society. Even though there was fame and some fortune in my family because of the politics, no one was rich. We all knew the value of money and how hard our parents worked to provide for everything that we needed. And we all, knock on wood, became successful. My oldest sister works for Howard University in Washington, D.C., and she's done very well with them. She does a lot of fundraising for them and works in their library there and does a lot of work for the university. My sister, who's about a year and a half older than me, my oldest sister is named Shelley. My sister, who's about a year and a half older than me, is a municipal judge in Cleveland, Ohio. She went to the University of Maryland and then went to Howard University Law School. And then my sister, who's just a little younger than me, about 4 years younger, Lori, is an anchor with WABC-TV in New York. She anchors their early morning news and their noon news. So a lot of people see her because of the visibility and because of New York City. And then my youngest sister, Kathy, lives here in the Detroit area, in the Novi area. She is a music elementary school teacher in the Huntington Woods school system, very accomplished musician, went to the University of Indiana on a voice scholarship, but she also plays the violin and the piano. And Lori went to Howard University, who's in New York. So we all did pretty well, and none of us are living at home.
Your dad, Lewis, served 15 terms in the U.S. House of Representatives. Your uncle, Carol Stokes, was the first African-American mayor of a major city in America, Cleveland,
yes,
when we were kids. What did your dad teach you at the dinner table, and what did your mom teach you at the dinner table on the weekends?
What was most important in our family, regardless of which parents we were around at the time, because both sets of parents always emphasized education. Go to school, get your education, do as well as you could, and remain humble. Don't be conceited. That was always emphasized at the table. Give thanks for all that we had. Religion was always at the core of our family. And everybody believed in getting up on Sundays and, going to worship. And they weren't fanatical about it. There were some Sundays where we didn't go to church, and that was okay. But at the core of everything was giving thanks for all that we have. I always remember my father every night, regardless of how late he got in. Before he got into the bed, he would get on his knees at the side of the bed and he would say his prayers. And he's 85 years old now, and he still does that. Sometimes he falls asleep in the middle of saying those prayers, and we kid him about that. But he'll wake up and he'll finish it, and then he'll get in bed and finish his sleep, just because sometimes his hours are crazy and he gets tired. But that was always important within the family. And then we were always taught, my grandmother on my father's side lived with us for a number of years. And she had a short little saying, but I think it was very true. She said, if you're nice to people, people will be nice to you. And so we were always taught to try to be as nice as you could to people. And I think that was important because of my father and my uncle going into the political realm, where there was a lot of attention. And for African-Americans, the history that they were making was unheard of, and it was unusual. And so growing up as a young African-American kid, people wanted to sometimes act as though you were different or treat you different, or as though our family was special because of that. And they just always made us seem like, no, there's nothing special about us. We're just like every other family. It just so happens that we're in the paper sometimes because of what we do. So we try to remain humble. Hopefully we've remained true to that.
We're talking to Chuck Stokes, and early in his career, he was a sports writer for the Washington Post. When we come back, we'll ask him about that. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Chuck Stokes. Chuck, early in your career, you got a job as a sports writer for the Washington Post. How? And tell us about those days.
Those were fun times. It was right after I came out of graduate school, if I could say the word, at Columbia University. And there's a guy named Mike Hill, and he worked for the Washington Post at the time, one of their assistant editors, and he came up to the school and he was interviewing people for summer internships. And I was offered one to go to the Washington Post for that summer as a fill-in for the main writers who would go on summer vacation, and so you would pick up some of their beat. And then that lasted through the summer, and then when the summer was over, I stayed on for maybe about 7-8 more months before I left the Washington Post to go into television. I always knew that I wanted to be in television, but I had a professor, Luther Jackson, a great professor at Columbia's Graduate School of Journalism, who always said, pursue print, learn how to write, learn something about the newspaper business. And then if you want to transition into television, do that. He was a hardcore kind of newspaper guy. I don't think he had a whole lot of respect for the TV guys. But I think it was great advice. And he said, later on, you can do that. He said, if you know something about print, they'll always respect you in print. They said, if you just do the broadcast side, the print guys will never respect you. That's changed a lot nowadays. But, you know, 30 years ago, I think there was a lot of truth to that. I enjoyed the beat. I never really wanted to pursue sports writing as a full-time career. And I'll tell you why, Jack. I always loved sports, especially growing up in Cleveland, watching Jim Brown and, you know, Jim Wooten and all the rest of them. But I realized when I started covering sports, it sort of took the fun out of it because you had to analyze everything as a sports writer, and you were paying more attention to the box scores and not just enjoying the sport. And so that took a little something out of it for me. And I said, I want to continue enjoying watching sports, and I don't want to do it as a sports writer. And so, as I said, I always wanted to be in broadcast. And then I was offered a job in Nashville, Tennessee, at the CBS affiliate there, WTVF, which is the same station that Oprah Winfrey started at. But we were there at different times. Didn't know each other, didn't work there at the same time. She was there a little bit before me, but it was a great station. And then I've been in television ever since.
1981, you joined WXYZ-TV as an executive producer of special projects. And then in 94, you become the moderator, writer, producer of Spotlight on the News, replacing an iconic hero.
The legendary Jim Harrington.
What made him so good?
He's good. Let me tell you one thing. I'll go back just a quick second. You asked me about the Washington Post. The one thing that sticks out in my mind the most of the different stories I did there that I'll always remember was when I covered Muhammad Ali, and he was doing an exhibition to raise money for some Native Americans there. And I was right at ringside, and luckily I have a picture of this, watching Ali, who was just a hero of mine in terms of how he did everything he did athletically and as a human being and as a political figure as well. But I had never been that close to ringside before. And to hear the things these guys say when they're punching on each other. I didn't know that much trash talking happened in boxing because I heard it all right there. So I have a different view of Muhammad Ali. Still have great esteem and respect for him. But I didn't know that as he's beating someone up, he told you beforehand how bad he was going to beat you up while he was doing it. But anyway.
He wasn't talking. That's float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
No.
Sonny Liston, I'm going to knock him out in three.
There were a few other words that came out that we can't say on the radio. To answer your question, Jim Harrington, I learned so much from him. Without Jim ever saying, okay, Chuck, now I'm going to teach you a lesson, or do this, or do that, or don't do this, or don't do that. That wasn't his style. He taught by his pure example of how he came in and did the show every week. Jim Harrington, I think, was the fairest on-air personality that I know of. And he never let his own personal views come into that show and into the interview. You could guess as to whether or not Jim was liberal or conservative, but he would never confirm it for you because he didn't see that as his role. He was a pure journalist. He felt, I'm there to moderate. I'm there to treat my host with respect, probe, try to get some information out of them, which he did. Also flanked with other reporters, he was there. But my job is to navigate everything and to make that person feel welcomed on my show. But also to be a journalist. And Jim, Democrats, Republicans, independents, they all enjoyed coming on Spotlight because everybody felt that Jim was fair. He had a great relationship with Coleman Young. He had a great relationship with Bill Milliken. He had a great relationship with Dick Headley. all these people from totally different political points of view, but they all had great respect. He had great respect, great relationship with John Engler. No one was afraid to come on the show for fear that I'm not going to be treated fairly by Jim Harrington. And he knew his stuff. He had covered, you know, stories since the 67 riots. And Jim was one of those reporters, along with Eric Smith and Bill Bonds, who, when the riots happened here, these were white reporters who could go into the heart of the city during turbulent times, but because of how they had treated people, they would be able to get the stories because people just viewed them as good, fair reporters. They didn't see color when they saw them coming through.
Who's the all-time gold standard on a national level being the greatest moderator?
I'll answer that in two ways. I think the toughest moderator, and the one who probed the most and got good answers, was Tim Russert with NBC and Meet the Press. I think the person who was probably most like Jim Harrington on a national level at being able to moderate great talent around him was David Brinkley. He was flanked by Cokie Roberts, he was flanked by Sam Donaldson and George Will, and he knew these people knew what they were doing. And so he was great at being able to let them go, not get in their way, but also knowing when to step in and when to pull back everybody. Plus, he had just covered so much in his lifetime and he had so much insight. And he was sort of that father figure. Great talent.
Who were the one or two most fascinating people you've ever interviewed?
Oh, boy, that's a good one. Few different people. Cardinal Adam Maida. Did a long interview with him out at his residence over on Boston Boulevard. Just a fascinating person, I felt, and someone who you could tell really cared about people. Brilliant man.
Fantastic salesman.
I didn't know he was a fantastic salesman, but I knew he was a pretty good golfer. a couple other people. Bill Milliken, one of the nicest people you'll ever want to meet, and I think just a very decent person. And then Barry Gordy, loved doing the interview I did with him in California. And the person who I found I had a lot of camaraderie with and being able to sit down and interview, Johnny Cochran, a great trial attorney. Interviewed him on three different occasions. And Johnny had an answer for everything. I don't care what you asked him. And great personality. You know, he would approach you as though he had known you for 50 years. And a very gracious person. Which some people had a different image of him because of the O.J. trial. But he was just a great trial lawyer, a lot of personality. And he was great friends with a guy from Detroit who's now deceased named Larry Doss, who used to be a partner with Coopers & Lybrand. And he was a very shrewd businessman. And a lot of people didn't realize how smart of a businessman he was.
Cardinal Maida may be the only cardinal in history to have a hole-in-one.
Yes, I know about that.
We're talking to Chuck Stokes, and I'm Jack Rasula. Neither of us, I think, have ever had a hole-in-one.
I haven't.
Okay. And this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Chuck Stokes, Spotlight on the News. Chuck, in the last segment, you mentioned Johnny Cochran, you know, with his famous line, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit.
That's right.
I've never seen you, Chuck Stokes, with gloves on, but every time I see you, you're a fabulous dresser. Okay? Dresses you?
I generally do it myself, but I gotta tell you, my wife picks out wonderful ties, and my mother-in-law, when she gives me a tie, it is always a perfect tie. She has wonderful taste, and my wife and I say that she missed her calling. She's a retired educator from the Detroit public school system, but she used to just love going around shopping. And we said that she really probably should have been someone who specialized in dressing other people. She has great taste, and she picks out wonderful ties. So a lot of times people will give me that as gifts for Christmas or Father's Day, another holiday. And I usually don't have to buy my ties that much between getting them as gifts for relatives. And then I try to put hopefully decent combinations together. But my father... was a wonderful dresser, and my father loved getting dressed. I don't actually relish putting on shirts and ties, and as soon as I can get a tie off, I get it off. The second I come in the house, and days when I can go into the office without a shirt and tie, those are the best days in the world for me. But my father is just the opposite. He, when he was a kid, he got a job at a clothing store, and he said ever since that time, he loved wearing French cuff shirts with cufflinks and loved getting dressed. And when he was in Congress, he was known for putting nice combinations together. So I guess I got some of that from him.
You've been blessed in many ways when you married Trudy. That
yes.
was a great blessing in your life. Some would say when you married her, you outkicked your coverage, Mr. Stubbs. So, I didn't say that.
That's very true.
How do you balance being fair and firm but not mean?
I think it goes a little bit back to what my grandmother used to always say. If you're nice to people, people will be nice to you. And I think that you can be a good journalist without badgering people or crossing over that line and being disrespectful of someone who may hold a respectful position in the community. That doesn't mean that you always agree with them, and it doesn't mean that you don't know, that you don't recognize when they aren't answering your question or they aren't being truthful. But it also means respecting your viewing public and giving them the respect that they deserve. People are much more perceptive than we give them credit for, and they're watching you through that tube, and they can tell that if you've asked someone a question three different times, three different ways, and they still are being evasive or not answering your question directly, they recognize that that person is probably either not being truthful or at least not forthcoming. And I don't think you have to yell to the screen and say, "You aren't answering my question," or stop lying, for them to recognize it. And what will happen is I think people will hold respect for you for trying to get the answer without being abusive, but losing respect for the person you're interviewing because you've given them an opportunity to answer something that they just won't answer. And so there are times when you've got to be tougher than others, especially if you have sort of a combative type of person you're interviewing, and you have to raise your level to their level. And I think a lot of it is sort of like sports. You sort of make your game based upon who you're facing. And if you got a tough pitcher coming at you, then you've got to get a little tougher. But there are also ways of being able to ask a question that's a good, direct question without yelling and screaming at someone. And so I just try to stay true to my style, but know when it's time to turn it up a little notch.
Chuck Stokes, what are the one or two most important things you've learned from these weekly guests over these past 17 years on Spotlight on the News?
Boy, that's a great question. I think a couple of things, Jack. One is I've learned that most of the people who I've interviewed who are considered to be very accomplished people in whatever field they're in have had failure along the way, but they didn't let that failure determine their destination, that whatever it was that didn't go right, that they picked themselves back up and they just pursued whatever their goal was. And so I've learned by interviewing people, for even my own life, because everything doesn't always go right. and you have good days and bad days and good weeks and bad weeks. Don't get too down when things don't go well, and don't get too up when something goes really well or you get an honor or an accolade or something of that nature. Try to just stay sort of balanced and in the middle there. So I've learned that. And then I've learned that many of these people who people want to get their autograph, or you know, you view them as sort of a thrill seeker, that they're really probably very humble people. And many of them are actually shy when you take them out of the limelight of whatever their profession is. It might be an athlete. It might be a politician. It might be a CEO. But you'll find that they put on their pants just like everybody else. They have feelings. They have family. And although they're in the public eye and they recognize that their life is different and they're treated different because they're in the public eye, that they're still human beings. And when things don't go right, they have to go home and face the music just like the rest of us do. So I've learned that people are people. And I used to get nervous before interviewing someone really big or really excited or a combination thereof. And sometimes that would affect probably the performance. Either I was really good at it because I really prepped for it, or you got a little nervous and maybe blew the question a little bit. I think over the years now, I don't get terribly excited over however big they are, because I realize that with however many titles they have behind their names or in front of their name, that at one point they didn't have all those titles. And they tried to get to where they are the same way the rest of us did.
I've often said that I'm not the host of this show. I'm the beneficiary of this show. Do you feel the same, Chuck Stokes?
I do, absolutely. I think what I love about this job and this profession, and one of the reasons I pursued it, was because I feel like I'm going to school every day. I'm constantly learning, that my education didn't stop when I formally came out of college or graduate school or whatever school you were in, that the people I'm sitting across from have so much knowledge about whatever they're experts in, and I get a chance to tap into their world and sit across from someone that normally the average citizen doesn't have a chance to sit and talk with, whether it's the president of the United States, or it's the CEO of a major corporation, or it's a world famous athlete. You could just, you know, it's a great relationship to be able to have, even if it lasts a half hour or an hour. You know, not too long ago, you're a great sports fan. I grew up watching Jim Brown at Municipal Stadium from afar. Last year, I had a chance to sit down and do an interview with him when he came to Detroit, promoting his organization called American. And we talked about the sports days, but we also talked about the things he did since he left sports, just in his life. And it was fascinating, you know, talking to him about that championship game that the Cleveland Browns won when I was just a kid. And so you get a chance. I mean, how many people get a chance to sit down and talk with someone who's in the Hall of Fame and about what their life was like? And I asked him, I said, did you ever miss leaving the game when you were at the top of your game and never going back? And his answer was simple. He said, no. He said, when you had, you know, that many people hitting on you all the time, and your decision was, can I go to Hollywood and make lots of money and not have to worry about someone hitting me in my knees or my elbows? He said, the choice is pretty simple. He said, I went to Hollywood.
And the rest is history. We're talking to Chuck Stokes, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Your You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Chuck Stokes, who's won 12 Emmys for editorial reporting and one Emmy for documentary reporting. Chuck, where does a person keep or display 13 Emmys?
You know, I used to keep them in my office, and then I looked up one day and I said, you know, that's kind of ridiculous. Somebody's going to think I got a real ego with these things here. So I took them out of that office, and I put them at home, and they're in what's considered kind of the den or the office that Trudy and I have there. And so they're in one spot and collecting a lot of dust.
In the 6 years I've done this show, people have asked me, what's been the single biggest common denominator of every guest? And I think the answer is, they've all had a fantastic mom. Some have had a great dad, some have had no dad, some have had a good dad, some have had a lousy dad, mm-hmm. but a great mom. Talk to us about your two moms.
I was lucky because I had two great dads and two great moms. My blood mother, very accomplished person, had great respect for her. She was a housewife for many years, and then went back to school later on in life, got her undergraduate degree, got her master's degree, became a school teacher in the Cleveland school system, then became principal of an elementary school and retired as principal within the school system, and is very involved in lots of different activities, and she's in her early 80s, and she's just someone who always valued education. Her parents valued education. So I got it from both sides of the family. My stepmother, and I say this just to keep, so the audience can stay with us, because we never said stepmother, stepfather. We just said mom and dad, because that's how we were treated. And we viewed both of them, both sets as, we're lucky. We got two fathers, two mothers, and the grandkids really felt that way, especially at Christmas time, because they got gifts from all sides, so they view everybody the same way. But my stepmother did a fabulous job raising us. You know, you stop and think about that when she married my father, there was 14 years between the two of them. Here's a young lady who went from zero kids to three kids instantly. And she stressed the importance of education. She gave us our values, because my dad, when he was both as an attorney as in Congress, he traveled so much. He was constantly on weekends. He was, you know, he would leave D.C. and he'd go back to Cleveland to the district because, you know, you have to be visible. And so we didn't see him really that much. He stayed in touch. He made all the important things that were important in our lives. But it was really my mother that did the disciplining and the raising. She gave us great values, and we got it from all sides. So, but they kept us centered. When we got out of line, they let us know we were getting out of line. When we got a little disrespectful or got a little smart mouth, we would get it from them. And I remember I slipped out of school one day in high school. We got out a little early. I think it was Martin Luther King's birthday or something. And some friends and I, we said, oh, let's get on the rapid transit. And let's go somewhere. I can't remember where we went. And I got on the rapid transit, and I looked up, and my grandmother was sitting there. And before I could get home, the phones were ringing. My mother said, got a call from your grandmother. Well, needless to say, I never did that again. Mothers and grandmothers, they have a way of keeping you in line.
Recently, we've heard a lot about WXYZ's Detroit 2020 that Ed Fernandez, the vice president general manager, conceived. Tell us about Detroit 2020.
It's a great idea that I give Ed full credit for. He came in as vice president general manager, and this was an idea he had. And I think when he first mentioned it, we all sort of looked around like, you know, is this pie in the sky stuff or what? But then we realized he was dead serious. He said, we believe that this station has the wherewithal and the resources to help this region define what it wants to be by the year 2020. And that means doing stories that help enlighten all of our viewers. It also means challenging the leaders in this region, reporting fairly about what's out there. It means unifying this area, forcing people to act, and taking on all types of subjects and some of the more difficult subjects that we've been grappling with here in this region for years. It may be dealing with transportation. It may be downsizing of the city. What do we do with the water department? I mean, you know, tough, controversial issues that we've been arguing about. You know, where are we in terms of transit in this region? You know, what's going to happen? Will we get that second bridge over to Canada? And so we've committed the full resources of WXYZ doing this. We have a full-time executive producer on it, a full-time online producer, full-time photographer, and all of the station is involved in the different departments in one form or another, and we meet weekly from representatives from all the different departments to talk about where we are, what's going to be next, and there is a plan for this entire year, and this is a 10-year project. This is not something that flash in the pan just to get some ratings or some attention. And I think the philosophy that Ed said is Detroit in this region, this is about the region, not just the city of Detroit, we didn't get to where we are overnight. We won't turn it around overnight. That this has to be a long-range goal and a long-range effort. And so far, response has been pretty positive.
When this 10-year project is up, will the Lions have won the Super Bowl, or will the Browns have won the Super Bowl?
Jack, you ask really, really difficult questions. You know, it's hard for me to believe that the two towns that I've spent the most time in my life, neither one of those football teams, which are original teams of the NFL, have not won a Super Bowl. To answer your question directly, I have a funny feeling that the Lions just might get there before the Browns, but I can't swear to it.
As our time winds down together tonight, Chuck, what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Get as much education as you possibly can. It is clearly your ticket to open up the door. Doesn't mean you'll be successful, but it means you will have a chance to prove what you can do. Without the education, you aren't going anywhere. That's number one. And number two is, whatever you decide to pursue and do, be honest about it and work hard at it. Don't worry about whether or not there's a rich rainbow at the end of it. It's whatever it is you're going to do, you have to get up and do it every day for most of your life. Make sure it's something you enjoy doing. If you enjoy doing it, you work hard at it, chances are you'll be able to make a decent living, maybe even a real good living doing it.
Chuck Stokes, thanks from all the people of the state for all you've done week by week, and also for being nice and doing it in a classy way. Keep it up.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.